Okay, this is Edward Troy, the Liberal Gladiator, and we're doing another Weight Off Your Shoulders show. I've got Aaron Mankoni, candidate for the Congressional District 3, in which we live here. And with that, Aaron, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Ed.
How are you doing today?
Good, good. And yourself?
I'm hanging in there, and on this pretty warm day.
I'm down in Durango.
Ah, okay.
Yep.
You can be a Durangutan. Yeah.
I haven't heard that one. We had an amazing forum last night with about 100 people here, the three candidates.
Fantastic. That's excellent. And, you know, there's all you know, many, obviously many different topics that have to, that the electorate needs to hear about. And obviously here, you know, that we're going to be going into the healthcare stuff or topic. And I'm going to go ahead and, you know, just in a sense, I'm just going to go ahead and ask you the first question here is, and what do you think is best for Coloradans, a single-payer universal care, state-based multi-payer universal care, or keep and strengthening the Affordable Care Act? And if none of those things are suitable in your vision, then please tell us what you see and what's where you're coming from on that.
Thank you. I'm for Medicare for All, and I've been a Medicare for All proponent for quite some time. Last September, for example, when Senate was trying to repeal Obamacare, I flew to Washington, D.C., and along with a couple hundred people from adaptive organizations, those are people who are will permanently be in some form of handicap or wheelchairs. We did direct action. We ended up getting arrested in order to try to stop the bleeding that continues to happen with the cost of health care. 2 years ago, I ran for U.S. Senate, and one of my main issues and fights was for what Colorado was putting forth, which was Colorado Cares, Colorado Amendment 69, which was a state, we'll call it a state fix for universal health care that could have saved us right now with escalating costs of health insurance for people. The reason I've come to this is because if we all know this, we've all seen this escalating of health care costs, but let me kind of lay it out personally for you. I've run a for-profit business, a nonprofit business, and I've been a county commissioner. So I've seen how health care costs are in different sectors. One in four people in the state of Colorado get their health care from Obamacare, and those costs are going up higher and higher and higher. So a family of four is now seeing about $1,500 to $2,000 a month just for some version of a bronze-level health insurance, which means another $2,000. You could have, a 20% 80-20 rates, deductibles. You could have higher co-pays. When all is said and done, a family could be seeing $25,000 to $50,000 worth of health insurance cost a year, both in having health insurance and paying some kind of form of out-of-pocket. And finally, why this is such an important issue for me and one that's very close to home is I am on Medicaid, and so are my children. I have been out of work for quite some time looking for health insurance, and last year I had two major accidents that require going to emergency rooms. I've had other things happen to my kids. That would have bankrupted me. And as we all know, one of the main reasons of bankruptcy in America is paying health insurance. So I don't see this one area, this one particular area why we can't just understand how simple it is that we have to cut out the middle person. I realize that means that there's somewhere between 500 and a million jobs in America related to this. But if we don't do it, how does an average person find $25,000 to $50,000 a year to pay for medical insurance before they may even go and get some form of health care?
Well, I think that that's an absolutely extremely valid question or perspective, and I think the answer is unfortunately very obvious to those who are analyzing it, and that is that you scale up the idea of single payer and you eliminate this idea of uncovered costs, you know, except where it's a elective cosmetic surgery or something like that. I don't think that, for instance, I don't think it's okay for taxpayer dollars to go into, shall we say, breast augmentation surgery or, you know, things of that sort. And
yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, if we go down, and so you are talking about the idea of a single payer universal care, which is what Medicare, the whole Medicare thing is that, but you have to reach a certain age, and
right.
By scaling it, you would obviously reduce the costs, and furthermore, those people who are those workers in the industry do function as redistribution vectors for capital flung back into the economy, but they haven't really necessarily, quote, added value, unquote, to that economic foundation because it is a redistribution. And, yes, those people could be released back into the economy where they could find jobs where they are actually adding value, creating wealth, or innovating or inventing or doing something along those lines. And I think that's pretty fundamental in economics. And, I would like to see that middleman personally also wiped out too. But that's my take. And I suspect that you're looking at it in a manner very similar to that. And
I'm 59 years old. And as I've seen healthcare costs change over the last several decades, the argument that Senator Cory Gardner always gives, or the GOP always gives, is that what we need is more competition, and more competition will bring down costs. Well, that's not that. They have yet to prove that in any kind of statement beyond that, because what brings down costs is obviously getting rid of the middleman. We live in a capitalist economy. We have CEOs of these healthcare industries making multi-millions of dollars and great incentives. And if we don't have everybody in the healthcare pool, which is what's been happening with parts and as they've sort of whittled away at Obamacare, they're taking out that everybody has to be in health insurance, because what brings down healthcare costs is having young people in the pool, because they're less likely to have major medical needs. And now what they're saying is that isn't necessarily going to be part of it. And when I go out to I've been to 10 forums, and I always ask, how many people in the room have Medicaid? How many people in the room have some form of Medicaid or VA insurance or Medicare? Very few hands go up, except last night. Most of the people in the room were seniors, and most of the hands went up for Medicaid. Then I ask how many people get their health insurance from their employers. That's been a very high ratio. As I said before, it's 3 to 4 people in the state of Colorado. How many people are on Obamacare? And then how many people do not have health insurance? And a few hands always go up, because they can't see how they can afford this. And that's why I think as a representative, what I try to do is simplify it. You open up your checkbook. You pay your bills every month. Your highest bill is typically your housing cost. In the Carbondale area, an average two-bedroom apartment goes for $1,500 to $2,000 a year. Let's call that $20,000, I mean a month, I'm sorry, $2,000 a month. So let's call that $20,000 a year. Those health care dollar amounts that I was giving earlier, that's another 20, but it could be even more if you get sick and you have to pay 20% of the deductible. So now you're up to $50,000 potentially. Then you have some of the other things that you pay for in life, like your, let's call it college tuition fee, or there's things called children that people have. And the average salary, middle-class salaries, and I've done a lot of salary reviews as a county commissioner in the area. What we consistently see is most people aren't making more than $60,000 to $80,000 a year who've been working, who may be educated. So that means they're potentially going into the red. They're not able to even save for retirement or try to help their parents as they may want to be able to help their parents as they get older.
Okay, so in a sense, we're discussing a philosophical difference between, the single payer kind of a situation where you're scaling things up to a massive scale and eliminating the middleman, which, you know, functions as someone that's, or as a entity that's scraping or scheming or getting a cut, if you will, of the transactions, and trying to get rid of that, I think is a very, very important thing. That is a huge thing, and I think I'm glad to hear you saying what you're saying, because I do think that is really important that people understand that, you know, how to get the cost of healthcare down is it's necessary to eliminate the idea and acceptance that health insurance is necessary to get healthcare, which is absolutely not true. You don't need insurance, you need healthcare. And so that, if that were the focus, I think that would make a lot of sense to a lot of people in the electorate. Now, what to do and how to do that, the process and procedure and sequencing of that might be, another matter.
Can I interject here?
Absolutely.
I don't think it's philosophical as the way you explained it. I think it's economical. So then the question becomes, are political leaders willing to have the political will in order to do something like that? And that's why I mentioned in the onset Amendment 69 2 years ago in Colorado. And the reason I bring that up is because what it proved to me is that most of the Democratic leaders in the state of Colorado, from a U.S. Senator Michael Bennett or Governor Hickenlooper, many of our state senators and representatives, our county commissioners, did not sign on to that opportunity to help people, and that was pushed forward by Senator Aguilera from the state capitol, who is a doctor, who looked at all of the issues. And when you have some 350,000 people in the state of Colorado that do not have any kind of health insurance, well, guess who pays for that? They go into the emergency room, they go ahead and they have to be taken care of by the medical provider, and then that gets billed on to us. And then there's other costs that go on that hospitals are typically listed as 501c3s or nonprofits. And yet you look at the kind of profits that they're making, and you would have to say, I ran a 501c3. And these hospitals are running like they're for-profit businesses and making major profits. Those profits should be called into question. There should be some type of ways through legislation in order to say you're either going to, these are the rules and regulations you have to play by if you're a hospital and you're going to call yourself a 501c3, otherwise you're going to have to be a for-profit business. But to put a bow around this is, if we do not have the leadership in the state of Colorado who had an opportunity to bring solution to people that would be in place right now, then what we're hearing is a lot of rhetoric from Democrats. And I've been very critical of the Democratic Party, some of the people in the Democratic Party first, because we're the ones who are supposed to live by example, by saying, great, you're telling us that you might want some version of a fix or some version. A lot of the governor candidates right now are all of a sudden are born-again progressives, and they're all for saying that they're for universal health care. Well, universal health care is on a federal, single-payer health care is on a federal level, universal health care is on a state level. Either way, how are they going to do it when they had the opportunity before?
Well, and I that's something that those individuals would have to answer, because and I certainly can't speak for them, nor would I be so presumptive as to try. But I you know, when we're taking a look at this, it does go back to an economic thing, and that's where the violation of fundamental economics occurs, because of the imposition of a philosophy or some other type of ism that needs to be abided by.
And the only reason, I'm sorry, I thought you were.
No. I mean that's I think that's part of the problem, is that there's a violation of fundamental economics. And
the problem is, follow the money and look at where our legislators, where our federal legislators get their major campaign financing from. The healthcare industry is one of the major ones. Senator Bennett, who I've obviously been so critical of, I ran against him 2 years ago, and he gets money from DaVita, and then he goes and doesn't vote in favor of ways that we could be getting generics from Canada, which would have brought down the cost of prescription drugs for many people. So if you follow how the lobbyists are working, and there's four lobbyists to every legislator in both the Senate and Congress, and you look at the major ones are oil and gas, the military-industrial complex, the finance industry, big pharma and big ag, well, then it's going to say to us, we've got a long, we're either fools or just not paying attention, that this ain't going to happen as long as they're taking money from these people, because these industries are capitalistic industries. I am arguing in this one area as our top priority as a socialist, that we need to have socialized medicine, because we're watching what's happening in the inequality gap. We're watching a stagnating salaries and rising housing prices, rising education prices. And this is, there are case studies all over the world, in Europe and Canada, that have used this. And it's working for those other countries, and those countries aren't going bankrupt doing it. The problem is we're spending all of our money on wars and deregulating industries.
I totally hear you there, and those are definitely topics I would love to discuss, but they're at least tangential to where we are on this. Campaign finance reform, one of the biggest problems that this Democratic Republic has is that. But in within healthcare, there are certain things that I think that we need to really get out there to the listening public. And one of the things that you and I discussed previously is about the elapsed time for acute medical care in rural areas. How do we handle that? What can be done? What sort of infrastructure needs to be put in place so that someone living on a ranch 20 miles or 30 miles off of a main highway can have a reasonable hope of being able to have acute treatment if and when needed? What are your ideas on that?
Well, this is because of what I said before, this is a very complex answer, because you can look at it on a regional level, on a state level, or a federal level. One of the opportunities that could be created, and what we have is a sort of a parallel example in in our communities is fire districts, because people have, there are statistics as to how far you should be from a fire station, and then et cetera. And so people create fire districts, and then they, they're taxed, and they're able to have some type of health and safety there. That could be used locally, and it could be done without having to go to the state or the federal level in order to do it. On the state level, I think you have to look for, because we have Tabor, it's going to be very, very difficult in the state we live in, that no one at a state level is ever willing to figure out how we could raise taxes and enable to bring in capital asset projects such as hospitals. And until that quagmire is answered, I would say that would be a very difficult one. It's a problem. I'm not trying to ignore the problem, that, because I've been, District 3 is 29 counties. And it's 750,000 people. It's the state of, it's the size of the state of Florida. So obviously, there's a lot of rural sections of Colorado, and this is a big problem.
Right. And so I'm interviewing Arne Menconi, a candidate, Democratic candidate for the Congressional District 3. He will be in the primary, and we're discussing health care here at KDNK. And and so just moving along, we got about 3 minutes. What do you think about the preferred physician's option? And, you know, is that, you know, going the way of the dinosaurs because of the division of insurance? And then also, if you can roll in an answer to how can healthcare structures create incentives for good behavior?
Well, I heard you say in an interview one time that you didn't use these exact words, but that you would like to maybe legislate that everyone be a vegan. And I laughed since you're a vegan, and I would love that you to pass that so that I would be forced to be a vegan, because it would help also with climate change too.
Yes, it would.
And I think this is something that then falls into some version of nannyism, if we look at it as a big picture, because, you know, how do you get people to stop smoking? How do you get people to eat right? How do you get people to exercise? Because if you're doing those things, not drinking, these are the leading causes of heart disease. These are the leading causes of diabetes, et cetera. My first reaction when I read those questions is, I would love to be able to say to people that we have to legislate some way of staying in some form of healthy shape, because that is the type of a way we keep down our own healthcare costs, meaning myself. I try to exercise. My father passed away of a heart attack at 52. The other thing is that, but we could go to some practical things. We could incentivize businesses. When I was a county commissioner, we did a lot of types of activities in order to incentivize our employees to stay healthy, be athletic. We brought in, we created an exercise room for people, did incentives like that. Education, I think a really important one that really directly works on this is early child welfare and health care, is giving opportunities before the age of 6 and 7, where a lot of the needs are being detected, and trying to prevent long-term health care needs for a child, and teaching, and not every child gets to pick their parent. And so that we can have these kids, as they're growing very, very quickly, emotionally, the brain development, et cetera, that they could have the type of health care needs. So in a short way of saying it is, maybe we can't get to universal health care really quickly, but we could get to some, if we have Medicare for older people, Medicaid for people who are poor, let's have a form of Medicare for people, for children under the age of 6. That's such a critical age group.
Well, I want to thank you for being on, and might have a couple of, you know, more seconds here, but you know, is there any takeaway that you'd like for the electorate to hear in terms of where Arne Menconi stands on this. We had about 25 seconds, super quick.
I want to thank the progressive movement for being for us to say Medicare for all. That was not a conversation that we could have had on a radio station like yours even 5 years ago. That means it's permeated into the conversation, and we could see solutions if we elect people now. I hope I have your vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Arne, so much for coming on, and we'll hear from you soon. Thank you so much, Arne.
Thank you.
All right, bye.